It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 11th day of January 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. It's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Folks are just sitting around waiting for you as we speak. If you pop in right now, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Terry Lee, and of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while in fact he is a third stage guild navigator, has not folded space to become Man Cave. Sparky noting in the chat room just now, 9 days of waiting for the next shoe to drop. Well, that's one way of putting it, and feel free to come on by and pop in and follow that conversational thread if you so desire. It's great, good fun. And every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, this program being no different. And so thanks go out to our subscribers for the 11th, 10th, and 9th day of the month. That means thanks going out to partial subscribers, or partial sponsors, rather. Total subscribers. Partial sponsors, John. And, John, thank you very, very kindly for the lovely note you sent. Thanks to Tony and Chico. Thank you to Christopher. Thanks to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you very kindly to Robin. Different Robin. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks to Daniel. And thanks to Judy. And thanks again to Paul from Parts Unknown. It's all, let's see here. Thanks to Ralphs. Thanks to Khalil. Thanks to Libby. Thanks to James. Thanks to Mary Bell. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you. Thank you, Robin, for jumping in and helping to take the fundraising goal down to 705. That's where we stand beginning this week. We need to raise, we're $405 away from having last week fully funded, and then tonight. So the fundraising hole is $705 deep, and hopefully we can take a bite out of that. Actually, it's $700 deep because Jeremy was first past the post getting us started this evening. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you so very much. So we are approaching mid-month. Friday will be the 15th. We'll be at mid-January, which is just surprising, but also encouraging because that means we're drawing ever closer to spring. Yes, spring, and I'm very happy about that. But there's still, I'm sure there will be plenty of fun and frigidity left. I know, in fact, there will be. Also, though, whatever optimism I might have about the eventual petering out of Well, that's got a whole new meaning to it now, doesn't it? Of winter is tempered by the knowledge of what is going on in our nation at the moment. This is some creepy shit. Because, among other things, we are now told that armed rallies, well, they're not rallies anymore, are they? Armed insurrections are planned in all 50 state capitals beginning, like, now. And that they're planning on going absolutely apeshit some more again, the maggots, in D.C. between this Sunday, which will be the 17th, and the day of the inauguration, the 20th. The 20th will be a week from Wednesday. Upwards of 15,000 National Guard troops are in the course of being deployed to Washington, D.C. These fools did not learn. These fools cannot learn. And so consequently, well, we're going to be dealing with the this insurrection until this insurrection is put down and its perpetrators utterly and completely taught what it is to commit treason. I'm still of the same mind I was last week. Namely, that felony murder needs to be invoked against every single human being who was inside the Capitol, and against a number of people who weren't, against the people who incited it, who kept it rolling, and that means from Trump on down. Okay? So, we shall see, because there have been some arrests. The guy with the zip ties, his wife dropped the dime on him. An active duty army officer, a woman from North Carolina who claimed she led people from North Carolina to the D.C. Insurrection. Well, she has resigned her commission. Derek Evans, the West Virginia delegate, has resigned. And he is now facing some, not many, federal charges. But he was admitted to a personal recognizance bond. So let me just address that real quick, and we'll get on with the rest of the program. That's galling. But we have to be true to our values on this. We have seen over the course of years how brutally things like cash bail have been used to incarcerate poor people of all stripes, and have been used most viciously against people of color. So when we say no cash bail, it has to be no cash bail, not no cash bail for people who aren't white. In a way, the PR bond represents, one hopes, a beginning of a move away from the hatefulness of the cash bail system. No matter how much we would like to see people like Derek Evans in the stir, okay? And I mean, that's a fact. We would like to see that, absolutely. A couple of things. I had a note from Rico in DeBerg, who said, "When I caught up with your podcast last week, you could have knocked me over with a feather. But once I adapted to it, I found that I have even more respect for you than I did before. So I want to put up a $50 challenge for your bravery and heart for coming out as who you are. You're an amazing entertainer, historian, and informer, and I love you and wish you well on your journey." Thank you, Rico. Thank you so much. Signed, Rico in the horribly terrible Steelers losing country. But hey, it's only a game. Gah! That was horrifying. What the hell happened to the Steelers last night? 28-0 by the time there was less than 4 minutes gone in the second quarter. What? But yeah. And then Rico added, and for playing Randy Rainbow on the front porch this past Friday, an extra $25 if the challenge is met. So we're at $700, and we've got a chance to take it down to $600. And then an additional $25, that'll take us down to $575, which will get us only $275 away from being fully funded for last week. So thank you, Rico. Thank you so very much indeed. Kyle, with a note, getting us started. What's all this about helicopters circling the Pence residence in Indiana? What the fuck is going on? I have a hard time seeing how this ends any other way than Trump declaring martial law, insurrection, and staying as dictator. I fear we've taken over, or been taken over. I know, but you can't live that way, Kyle. We can't live that way. There is not going to be martial law. He will not be allowed to stay in office. He will be dragged out kicking and screaming if necessary. And there are moves afoot today for... Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. Meanwhile... Robin! Subject. Alabama. And, you know, they say it that way in certain parts of the state. Alabama. This is spelled A-L-L-A-H-B-A-M-A. Alabama. Alabama. Montgomery, Alabama. On this day in 1861, Alabama was the fourth state to secede from the Union during the Civil War. Oh, Jeffrey's already at it, pondering, and who in the hell was the dumbass who let Bama back in? Well, I really don't care who it was, but I wish Alabama would go ahead and secede again, because according to the CDC, the state is one of the worst to live in, and my Ohio State Buckeyes have to play them tonight. These dumbasses don't know how to win a civil war or about education and health care, but they sure can play football. You damn right, Joey. Roll Tide. Roll. And the whole re-secede thing, well, that was taken care of shortly after that little dust-up was over in 1865. The good news is that Bama may not have the two dumbest senators in the country. I think that belongs to the state of Missouri. No. If you've got Tommy Tuberville, you've got enough stupid for three or four senators. But Jeffrey's back, adamant. Yes, Alabama does have the dumbest senator, and the newly elected Tommy Tess Tuberville, as this dumbass thought the three branches of government were, and I quote, have you ever seen a giraffe quote? Yes. The new idiot senator from Bama believes the three branches of government are the president, the House, and the Senate. Yes. Yes, Alabama, that's your new senator. Bama bummer for you Bamians. Kind of hard to argue with the little guy. Anyway, though, I was referring to Josh Hawley and Roy Blunt. You know, Josh Hawley, the Yale law grad who and Stanford, who brought the collective IQ of Yale Law School down about 100 points with his antics in Congress, along with Ted Cruz, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, in attempts to overturn an election that had been deemed legitimate by 60 courts and their respective judges, some of whom were Trump-appointed. Oh, God, more from Jeffrey. Hollering about Hawley. They should turn this guy Hawley into a... Wait for it. They turn this guy Hawley into a... Hawleygram. Oh, dear God. Because this guy is so one-dimensional, he doesn't get the big picture. Well, good job, Jeffrey. I think that sums it up in a snapshot, single-dimensional and all. You kind of, length and width and... Never mind. But then there's Roy Blunt, and this idiot said we don't need to impeach Trump again because he's learned his lesson from the first impeachment when he tried to bribe Ukraine to come up with third on Joe Biden before the election. What, did he get that from Susan Collins?
I think he's learned his lesson.
Yeah, Blunt, Trump learned so much following his first impeachment that he incited a band of radical idiots to perform an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and to assassinate the vice president and the two Democratic heads of Congress. I really wonder how close this came to happening. And Blunt, don't you remember the last person who claimed Trump had learned his lesson? Oh, that was, yeah, I already did. And Jeffrey just bounces his long neck up and down when you do Susan Collins.
Susan Collins!
However, Jeffrey's about to be Blunt. I think they call this guy Blunt because somebody must have hit him in the head, you know, blunt force trauma, or he's been smoking too many blunts. Jeffrey, I really think you should try to avoid being blunt. The guy's a jerk. And, yeah, I had something on Facebook. Joey notes about how Bama's not friendly to trans people. Well, Robin, on the whole, the state of Alabama treats its people like some third world countries treat their country folk. And that's why Jeffrey refers to it as Allah-bama, considering some of these oppressive religious states are so cruel to their people and the people are so brainwashed that they can tolerate these demeaning oppressors. Remember, I've referred to it for years now as Talibama, as in Taliban, Talibama. See what I did there? Yeah, sure. The state ranks 45 out of 50th in crime and on the economy 46th out of 50 in health care, largely because they don't have the Medicare expansion, and dead last at 50 in education. And to think I came out of those public schools. How about that? Jeffrey and I encourage Alabama to secede again and take Mississippi with you. We'll keep Georgia, and y'all know why that is. Sorry, Robin, I know that's your home state, but Jeffrey and I just had to stick it to you on the Journal because we both believe the Alabama Crimson Tide is going to stick it to the Buckeyes tonight on the football field. Yes, we suspect the Tide will roll, and we don't know why you refer to Nick Saban as Nick Satan just because the guy was born on Halloween. You should like him because he's the coach of your favorite team, and he was born in Fairmont, West Virginia. I know. No, he's Nick Satan because he made a deal with the devil. Jeffrey is very tall, and most giraffes are not afraid of high tides, but tonight Jeffrey is really nervous about this tide that will be a rolling in. Jeffrey does not like Alabama very much because they have a Republican elephant as their mascot. By the way, speaking of morons, did that idiot House rep resign yet? You know, the barbaric Derek from West Virginia? That he did. Yes, he did, Joey. This has been Joey's Journal for Moran Monday, the 11th day of January, 2021, with Giraffrey watching out for that high tide. And I'm not nearly as sure. I remember the last time Alabama went up against Ohio State, and turned out Ohio State handed them their crimson asses. So that's why, you have to play the game. You never know, because there's 11 people on either side of the ball, and the ball's not round. It's kind of got pointy ends, and it bounces funny ways. And then you just have to play the game. You got to buckle up and snap up and snap the ball and hack the ball and throw the ball and run the ball, and you got to play the game. We won't know till the game is over. And they're going to play to the last echo of every whistle, and when the dust settles, we'll know who the mythical national champion is. Yes, indeed, we sure will. That's my imitation of a college football coach being interviewed prior to the game. A damned fine Journal there. Joey. Two things, says Steve in New York. The 17th is a day because Q is the 17th letter of the alphabet. I suspect you knew this. I hate the death penalty. However, I'm wondering if in this case this may be one of the exceptions to my disdain for it. It's kind of hard. I am anti-death penalty, too. But it sure seems like, considering the things we've executed people before for in the past, trying to overturn the government and immiserate 330 plus million people might actually qualify, especially if it's felony murder. And of course, there's talk of mass pardons and stuff like that. But yeah, Kyle notes, had it not been for a black cop managing to get in front of the terrorist mob to get them to chase him, they would have made it into the Senate. They were literally at the fucking Senate door. Yeah, they were. And, of course, Lauren Boebert, the gun-toting, rootin' tootin'est member of Congress ever from Colorado. Well, she, of course, was actively trying to help the insurrectionists find and murder Nancy Pelosi. She was giving directions to the hunters in real time from the floor of the House of Representatives. And some of this shit just can't be blinked at. It can't be. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Kyle, answering Rico and DeBerg's challenge. And thank you as well to Silent R. Lamar. Oh, my goodness gracious. Silent R. Lamar has answered Rico's challenge and then some. So that takes us down to... $520 to go. $520 to go to finish fundraising up through this date. Thank you. That's just breathtakingly wonderful, Silent R. I appreciate it so very much, and we all do. Silent R. Lamar noting, oh, well, it has hit home. I'm blessed. On the 9th of this month, my wife works for the MTA. She has COVID-19. My two children who stay with us are COVID-19 free, as well as am I. We've sent our children to stay with their grandmother. I've moved in with my 87-year-old mother. The country feels I have the means to separate as follow, to move my children where I need to and myself as well. I'm down for 10 days, and since I have means to do so, I am blessed. I understand. I understand, Silent R. Lamar. Please do everything in your power to keep everybody safe. Southern California has become a terrifying place. And all of our thoughts are with all of our community. There and all over the country. As we try to get through this pandemic. Here in West Virginia, we're still at 80 and above. We haven't... And I was telling someone earlier today, I desperately want Agnes to get her shot. Because she needs it. I've been worried almost a solid year now. And she's been basically housebound for almost a year now, and she's beginning to really want to get out in the world a little bit. Yeah. Subject line, teaching him. Scott in San Diego. Good luck with that. There are more than a few folks around who still aren't completely clear on who won the original U.S. uncivil war that supposedly ended 156 effing years ago. All true. All true. Steve noting, everything would be great if them choirs couldn't marry and if we didn't eat the fetuses. Yeah, I know. I know. It's just ruining it for everybody. On paper, as far as the game this evening's concerned, it's going to be a great game. However, there are so many times when we have great games on paper that end up being nothing of what we expected and altogether blasé. I think one of these things will happen. One, it'll be such a shootout that whoever has the ball last will win. Two, one of the defenses will play unexpectedly well and shut the other down. Or three, it'll come down to a late turnover. The one scenario I can't see is a game-ending field goal, which probably is what will happen because I'm saying it can't. Oh, it can. It can, and it's... Well, I had a buddy once, every time we'd go to Morgantown for a game, he'd say, I sure hope we get a nice close game. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. I want a blowout. I want to be out of the parking lot by the end of the third quarter. And but some people, well, they don't learn. Yeah, I know. Kyle says, remember when we were all being alarmists for calling Republicans terrorists? Well, they were then, and they are now. And now they've branched out. There are insurrection terrorists and they're bioterrorists too. They're trying to fill their Republican terrorism bingo card, I guess. And Megan with a note. DOD fumble. I just got off the phone with my mother, who told me that the former head of the Capitol Police went on the news and said his call for the National Guard was blocked by, don't wait for it, a twit at the DOD because, quote, didn't like the visual. What the entire fuck? If anybody in the Horn family can corroborate this, please do. We shall see. We shall see. And so, from 520, we have just made it down below the $400 mark. 470 to be precise. Thank you to Jack in Shreveport, who awakened to probably a few inches of snow today. I saw some pictures from central-ish Louisiana, south of Jack, and my friend said that there were 4 inches or so of snow on the ground this morning, and that, of course, took out all the power lines, so everybody was sitting cold in the dark. But it sure were pretty. Yeah, it's like that sometimes. But it's surprising to get that much snow. And across North Alabama today, I noticed that there was a winter weather advisory. And just a reminder, when it snows in the Deep South, a region that is not known for keeping its shit together in the first place loses it entirely. Because I don't know why, but there's something about snow on a road that makes people who can't drive in snow and don't have the vehicles for it suddenly feel the burning urge to go out and toddle around and put their car in a ditch. Because, like, for instance, where I grew up, they did everything short of declaring martial law when the first snowflake fell. One snowflake, and we knew we were not going to school the next day. But, Lord, that was a long time ago. Yeah, it was. So just by way of fleshing out what I was saying earlier, and the FBI has put out a bulletin. And Megan says, be careful out there, Robin. Yeah. Trump supporters are planning armed protests at the U.S. Capitol and all 50 state capitals leading up to Biden's inauguration. Aaron Katursky at ABC News got hold of it, the bulletin. The FBI expects the armed protests are expected, armed protests, further insurrections are expected to take place at the U.S. Capitol and state capitals leading up to Inauguration Day. One group's out there calling for storming local, state, and federal courthouses and buildings if Trump is removed from office before January 20th. And the FBI says it's received information about an identified armed group intending to travel to Washington, D.C. on 16th January. A little bit of irony there, too, because a lot of these maggots have a distinct fondness for Ayn Rand, you know, that unreadable writer who gave us The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged and ugh. Oh, God, it's terrible. Well, she once wrote a play, and it's not a terrible play. It's one of the few things she wrote that didn't entirely suck. And it's called The Night of January 16th. So, interesting. They haven't learned, and they're apparently incapable of it. Consider for a moment this being Moran Monday and all. Consider the one maggot. And it's not much in the way of sound, and so I'm not going to bother with it. But there was a maggot who got bounced off a flight and was recorded in the airport squealing and crying, "They called me a terrorist! Said I can't fly! This is what they do!" "Aw, snookums. Ism's having some white privilege problems. Didums not know that being a total fucking terrorist would get you bounced off an airplane." Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dear God. Okay. Thanks for that, Steve. Steve has just put the... "Who is John Galt? He's a fucking dick." $15 challenge on the table. So if that's met, that'll take us down by another $30, and that'll get us down to $5.40, and will only be $240 from being fully funded for last week. That's awesome. Darlene with a note. And the black Capitol Police officer should receive a commendation for what he did, and then he should be promoted to lead the CPO to replace Sund, being chased by white male maggots up the steps and only using his voice and a baton while calling for backup into his walkie-talkie, and having the presence of mind to lead the maggot mob away from the Senate chambers, which was off to the right of one of the landings, and leading the whole hot mess into a large room where he finally got some backup. Good enough for me. Whoever he is, he should be chief of the Capitol Police. Oh, breaking news. Chad Wolf is resigning. These bastards are dropping like flies. I thought he got resigned last week, Darlene. Says Darlene, I rather like Tracy's visual. Rats fleeing the sinking ship. Yeah. Oh, and I'm asked to remind people that, and this is just by way of an update, I'm in the process. See, I set up the GoFundMe oral surgery campaign before I knew I'd be coming out. And so there's a whole lot of old Bob all over that goal. Well, I mean, there's one picture, but I'm in the process of editing that to reflect current realities. But that thing is still on the burner, and it's kind of slowed to a bit of a crawl. We're about, oh, let's see. We're not quite halfway there by about $2,000. We're $2,000 away from halfway there. And just a reminder, if you want to kick into the GoFundMe campaign, there's a coffee mug that goes out to everybody who kicks in $120 or more. So hopefully that's a little bit of an inducement, but I can't really schedule anything until I know that I'm going to be able to get all the work done. Remember, this is oral surgery. This has nothing to do with my transition or anything. So just in case there's any curiosity along those lines, and I know we're terribly curious people. Thanks for the reminder. I do appreciate that. We've got a bunch of boxes stacked up and addressed and ready to go, and I'm just trying to come up with a great big mass of them and take them all down and get them all going in one fell swoop. So it is going to happen. Yes, Jack confirms what I said a little bit ago. Ah, yes, Bob, we had a winter wonderland last night in Shreveport, too. I'm not sure what the total inches were, maybe 2 to 4. I've weathered the storm with only a 90-minute TV and internet outage this morning. We can always count on some kind of delayed effect here. Thankfully, there was no power outage in my immediate area, although I think there were 50,000 or so in Louisiana. Maybe that included the near part of Texas as well. I know it went out in Natchitoches. Hopefully I managed to see a little bit of blue sky this afternoon. I didn't think I'd be seeing that according to the weather forecasts. Stay warm, and the nice thing about snow in the deep south is it goes away really quickly, and you're just back to mud. Elbert in Rhode Island says, Robin, a Pentagon spokesman definitely said they did not want National Guard troops to go to the Capitol. They were afraid it would look bad if guardsmen were seen womping on white people. CNN had a report on it this afternoon. So, Megan, there's your corroboration. And who we're talking about, the officer who protected the Congress, Officer Eugene Goodman. And Susie Madrak has a post over at crooksandliars.com. And, you know, more and more video is coming out to show just how nasty this was. A little bit of sound here of Officer Goodman. That is genuine heroism, and he does deserve the gratitude of the nation. Man, those racist maggots were chasing a black man, and it was just like 155 years ago. So much of this madness. But, yeah, acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf is officially gone as of midnight tonight, per a senior DHS official. His nomination was withdrawn by the Trump administration last week, the next day after he had called upon Trump to call off the dogs. And that is entirely, of course, unacceptable. A graphic of Mike Pence sitting in his chair. This from Trey. He's sitting in his he's sitting in a chair, Mike Pence. He's got his suit coat buttoned, and his eyes are closed. And the caption says, "Dear God, make me a bird, asterisk, so I can fly far, far away from here, paren, asterisk. Not a gay bird." That's good, yeah. So, but shit has started happening. And it will move rather quickly, not quickly enough to suit most of us, but there is a procedure. Okay, so what happened today? Well, today, Steny Hoyer stood up in the House and made a unanimous consent request, which means that if any objection is heard, it simply fails. But he made a unanimous consent request that that the House approve a resolution calling upon Mike Pencilneck Geek to invoke the 25th Amendment and remove Donald Trump from office. Who objected? Well, of course, a guy who was so loathed by his own party in his home state, a Republican, his own Republican Party, in his home state of Maryland, that he felt compelled to walk across the street into West Virginia, where he's now a member of the House of Representatives for West Virginia. Now, I'm talking about Congress critter Looney Mooney, and he objected to removing Donald Trump, so because fear of maggots. So now it will be voted on tomorrow. It'll pass. And the articles of impeachment have been introduced. And they will begin process on that on Wednesday, day after tomorrow, the 13th. A week from the inauguration. But then the problem occurs in what happens next. Because Moscow Mitch McConnell, who thinks about as much of America as a hog does of silver table service at high tea, Mitch says he ain't going to call nobody back until the 19th. Because Mitch's about to lose power. And it'll be a glorious day when he does. But Chuck Schumer is said, at least according to some reports, particularly by the Washington Post, there is a kind of an obscure rule that came into effect in the days and years after September 11th. In particular, it was 2004. When the rule was approved that gave the majority and minority leaders the power to bring the Senate back into session under a state of emergency. And if that's the case, Schumer is said to be exploring the possibility of using that rule to call the Senate back into session immediately after the House passes the bill of impeachment and transmits it to the Senate. And, of course, we're always on our side good for some hand-wringing here and there, and this case is no different. But I've seen talk of, you know, oh, this will derail Biden's agenda. No, it won't. No, it won't. And even if it does, well, there's still going to be the better part of 3 years and most and 11 months to do this in. Because honoring one's constitutional oath is the most important thing one can do as an elected member of the Congress. Or any other oath sworn official. We now have a small list of presidents who have been impeached. Andrew Johnson, of course. Nixon didn't get impeached, but was about to. And the wisdom of him bailing out when he did, he's looking smarter and smarter. Bill Clinton, of course, got impeached for consensual sex that was no business of anybody but, well, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Ms. Lewinsky. And then Nitwit Nero got impeached for crimes, high crimes and misdemeanors that would have made the previous three fucking blush. But as noted, among other people, by Joey and Giraffe, it didn't have any impact on him. He felt no shame from it. There was no contrition. And no, Susan Collins, he did not learn his lesson. Fucking idiot from Maine. ES&S machines, by the way, just like Kentucky. Just saying. Not saying, just saying. But he didn't learn his lesson, and so, as awful as he has been, he needs something to delineate him for how awful he has been, and he will be the first twice-impeached president in American history, and hopefully for a long time to come. And, of course, over on the maggot side of affairs, their hand-wringing has begun, too. Oh, you can't further divide the nation by impeaching Donald Trump again some more. Shut up. And somewhere, and I guess this will be put off a little bit, but there need to be motions for expulsion made for the Senate Sedition 7 and for at least the very worst of the members of the House. Lauren Bobbitt, Mo Brooks, Les Brames, that jackass Kevin Buck, is that his name, or Ken Buck? Louis Asparagus Gohmert. Oh, there's too many to name. But there need to be votes at some point in time expelling them. Will there be? I don't know. Just like I don't know if there's going to be felony murder charges filed. But I'm hard-pressed to figure out how you hide from something like that. I just don't know. But anyway, Schumer... The language from the Washington Post says, Schumer's exploration of this option is one way the incoming majority leader is rebutting an argument laid out by his counterpart, McConnell, who told GOP senators in a memo last week that it was virtually impossible to begin an impeachment trial before January 19th, which is when the Senate reconvenes. Both McConnell and Schumer would have to agree to reconvene the Senate, putting pressure back on the outgoing majority leader to confront Trump as the House heads toward an impeachment vote this week for the president's role in inciting the violent siege on the Capitol on January 6th. So apparently he would still have to have McConnell's agreement, and getting to that agreement then leads you to wonder what kind of horse trading will take place as part of that. Our buddy labor man, Gary, said, no way. How can you do that without a state of emergency? Well, you might recall we've been in one for years now, and it's never gone away. Jesus. Well, shit, that's just rotten. Glenn in San Diego with a note. Several gorillas at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park have tested positive for COVID-19 and are exhibiting symptoms. Shit. That means it's gone species jumping some more. Damn. Jeremy with a note. A second officer from D.C. has died as a result of what happened last week. Felony murder indeed. I don't know if Jeremy's seeing the news of the same one that I saw, but a member of the D.C. Capitol Police committed suicide as a result of what went down last week. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Subject line, reality spoken here. Do we really think, and this is Matt in San Francisco, do we really think if the situation was reversed and the Democrats did what transpired last week, that the Republicans would be calling for unity and be all right with not pushing forward with holding people accountable? For Christ's sake, look how many hearings they had about Benghazi! Let's get Trump to testify in front of Congress for 11 hours. Do let's. God, I hadn't even thought about that possibility. Of course, I doubt that he would be allowed to testify. Well, no, he would be allowed. I doubt his handlers can't get the dosage right enough to keep him from showing up in the well of the Senate and just ripping his clothes off and playing with himself. He's there. But it would be nice to see him attempt to defend himself and throw a fit. And Jack in Shreveport pointing out subject line nastiness. I think it was Barbara Lee I saw on MSNBC who said that the N-word was flying frequently at black members of the Capitol Police. Of course it was. The insurrectionists were carrying their flag. The Confederate, the devil's diaper. Of course they were hurling that word. They were experiencing true American patriotic freedom. And that includes the freedom to use not politically correct language. Well, that's true, too. Arnold pointing out, you know, if the Congress ever goes back to Republican, Joe Biden will be impeached for everything from masturbating to not masturbating to eating to not eating, being old to being not old enough and white and being not white enough and being alive and being dead, not being dead. I think Arnold has the temperature of the situation. And I mentioned the gorillas there in San Diego. The fact of the matter is, the state of California has seen 10,000 coronavirus deaths in just 1 month. That data came out today via the Johns Hopkins University tool. California itself has recorded over 30,000 deaths since the pandemic started almost a year ago. And it took 6 months for California to reach 10,000 deaths, but in barely a month, it went from 20,000 to 30,000. In California, they reached a two-day record over the weekend of 1,163 deaths. Hospitals are at capacity, overstretched, bulging at the seams. California still, though, is behind Texas and New York at 40,000-ish deaths. In L.A. County alone, as Tracy was talking about on the front porch Friday, they've topped 12,000 deaths total. confirmed COVID-19 cases have passed the 900,000 mark. Dr. Haig Antabalian said, I presume now that every patient that I'm seeing, and I act like every patient that I'm seeing, is COVID positive. Except for my last few shifts, I would say that close to 80%, maybe 90% of patients are COVID positive. And that doctor is an ER physician at UCLA Medical. And how much of this is attributable to Thanksgiving and Christmas? Oh, we're going to be fine. We're just going to be with some friends. And now it's blowing up all over the country. I won't go to my local Walmart anymore. I call it COVID Mart now because that place is crawling. I had to go to the store earlier today and wound up driving 30 miles away to a slightly less hot county and did my dead level best to stay 10, 15, 20 feet away from people. Honest to God, at some point in time, I think they should start making full body condoms. I'm not talking about any. No, just, you roll the thing down and there's holes for your nose and your mouth, but you put your mask over that and the holes for your eyes and, I don't know, goggles or something. Because it's not, at one point in time, we were all about where is it and where isn't it, and West Virginia was the last place to report a case, and now there's no where is it anymore. It's just where isn't it. Florida is a hot mess. Their vaccine program is for people 65 and up. And they can, and now they're trying to do it through Eventbrite to get tickets. Well, honey, I didn't get our vaccine tickets, but hey, it looks like Ted Nugent's got a reunion tour going. Got tickets for that. Christ. And so, job one, after Joe Biden is inaugurated, is going to be coming up with a better way to deliver the vaccine. Because there's something, I saw a number earlier today that, 20 million doses, and we've managed to maybe inoculate 8 million people or something like that. It's going to be a long way to herd immunity. And also, going back to L.A. County for a minute, L.A. County said they're going to stop using the curative COVID-19 tests at pop-up testing sites because the U.S. FDA has sent out an alert that the test is problematic for false negatives. And those are the scary ones because false negatives tell you you don't have it, so then you go out and about and exhibit even less care and caution than otherwise when you've got it and you're spreading it like crazy. Remember, some of the early data suggests that it spreads the most virulently when a person is asymptomatic. That may be because once they're symptomatic, they're not able to move around as much. God. And Lou points out it'll be interesting to compare the treatment of the peace protesters in the 60s and 70s who damaged public property, the Chicago 8, et cetera, and the Trumpanzees. Well, I think it's at least clear that the treatment is dramatically milder for these white privileged assholes so far. And unless there are a few felony murder charges and a few people at hazard of capital punishment, they're never going to, they haven't learned for 156 years, so 157. You get my point. Oh, and Kyle with an update to what Arnold said. Arnold, you missed the part where the Republicans impeached Joe Biden for Jill Biden not being a real doctor and calling herself doctor. That's arguably worse than a president getting a blowjob. Okay. And that gets a jingle. Darlene says Biden also suggested to the press when getting his second vaccine shot today that the Senate could bifurcate. Half the day spent on the trial towards conviction of Trump and the other half the day can be devoted to his cabinet nominees. He seemed totally fine with that, throwing it out to the big U and the Dems in Congress, qualifying it with, but I haven't spoken with the parliamentarian yet. You go, Joe. That's the big U, the universe. And that's a way of speaking to the parliamentarian. And Darlene adds, I'm really loving Amendment 14, Section 3 right now, which Nancy did not rule out. As a matter of fact, she referenced it in her letter to Pence. I love it when Democrats can say all options are on the table, and AOC took it one step further recently in an interview with Stephanopoulos that all options are on the table and are not mutually exclusive. P.S., it's unclear that the CPO that committed suicide did so because of the insurrection, Capitol Police officer. He was off duty, and there's no indication he was on site at the Capitol at the time. More may evolve from this. PPSS, New Jersey Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, a Democrat, has tested positive for COVID after being in protective lockdown isolation with Republicans who refuse to wear their goddamn masks. Congresswoman Watson Coleman is 75 years old. She's a cancer survivor and the first black woman in Congress from New Jersey. She's also sick from the infection and in between vaccination shots. All those fuckers should be brought up on charges of attempted murder and included in the invocation of the 14th event. Or 14th Amendment, I'm sorry. 14th Amendment. And since Darlene referenced it, let's take a peep at Section 3. It is technically the part of the 14th Amendment that was specifically drafted with the recent unpleasantness, otherwise known as the Civil War, in mind. That's how they talk about it in the South, the recent unpleasantness. They're still calling it the recent unpleasantness now, even though, you know, 1865. The text of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment says, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid and comfort to the enemies thereof, but Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. So, Congress would have to act affirmatively to say, nah, your insurrection was okay. And they'd have to do that by a 2/3 vote, which is as hard to get in one direction as it probably is in another. And we've let the 14th Amendment slide before, frankly, because Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, and remember, at the time of the Civil War, as I discussed last week, part of the reason that the Union was able to whip the South was because of the discovery of debt. I mean, it wasn't really the discovery of debt, but it was the leveraging of it through people like Salmon P. Chase as Treasurer of the United States under Lincoln. And it opened the floodgates of a lot of money to fund the war effort so that the South never even had a chance. But there were some people who were not happy with the United States going into debt and financing things like war through debt. And so you get Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. And I say this not to throw cold water on any ideas, but it's pretty clear. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. Shall not be questioned. Not may not, not might not, shall not, no, thou shalt not, commandment, okay? Nonetheless, that did not stop George W. Bush back in the early aughts from going to the Bureau of the Public Debt in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and pointing to a file cabinet saying that the public debt was nothing but a file cabinet full of useless IOUs. He questioned the validity of the public debt, useless IOUs, and not shit was done about it. And Section 3 reads a bit messily, but it reads messily because the people writing it were trying to leave no loopholes. And there's really... There's really no... It says, shall not be, and so it is prospective in operation. What happens when the person doing that already is? Shall have engaged in insurrection. That's a tormented verb tense to start with. And as at least law school hypothetical exam question, interesting as it is, I would not, it is unfortunately rather of a thin reed to hang one's hat on. So, I get your point, Darlene. I have a sad sense that that's not going to go anywhere. James in Illinois, further impeachment charges by the Republicans against Biden. He's Irish, duh. Well, okay. Everything's available. He's going to be impeached because his middle name's Robinette. Yeah. And as to the bad optics of sending in the National Guard, Flavio notes, so the optics that followed were an improvement how? Well, you know, they weren't, but they didn't know that was what was going to go down, and gosh. Right. Steve pointing out, and that's why I never use the passive voice. It just makes things messy in drafting. And, right. The passive voice is always the weakest form. The weakest verb form you can use in trying to make any kind of a point. Don't know why, just is. Kind of delineates a lack of force, I guess. And yes, two members of the Capitol Police have been suspended for their role in the riots. Thanks to Matt and David in South Carolina, Stan, for that. Another individual has also been arrested for what they did, according to Representative Tim Ryan, who said there were two people suspended. One was the selfie officer, and another was an officer who had put a maggot hat on and started directing some people around. And Ryan chairs the House subcommittee that's handling the investigation into the response. It was the interim chief who determined that to be qualifying for immediate suspension, he added. And even still, there are somewhere between 10 and 15 Capitol Police officers who continue to be under investigation for their potential shameful behavior. Stop it, Robin, says Lee in New York. Shall has a new meaning to Republicans. Remember when the House shall get any person's tax returns? Insert Kenneth Copeland laugh. Ha, ha, ha! Ha, 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 ha. Yeah. Shall. Just doesn't have the force and effect that it used to. So I mentioned Chad Wolf's resignation. And that's curious. Because what that actually means is that, well, there's not going to be anybody at the helm of DHS, Homeland Security, when Homeland Security is in charge of providing security for the inauguration. Oh, and thanks, Darlene. We have finally figured out who the Ted Nugent cosplay guy was. You know, the guy with the horns, the buffalo hat on and the horns and the face painted red, white, and blue. And yeah. Cue up the world's tiniest violin on the world's tiniest record player, playing My Heart Bleeds Peanut Butter for you. Over at Salon, Chauncey DeVega writes, Jacob Chansley, a.k.a. Jake Angeli, the Arizona man who helped break into the U.S. Capitol while wearing horns and animal skin, is, wait for it, starving in prison. His mother was interviewed by an ABC News affiliate, and he has refused to eat since being arrested on Friday. Hey, it's not just us. He hasn't eaten since Friday because the jail doesn't have any organic food for him. ABC 15 reported, Chansley politely addressed the judge but did not make any statements regarding the charges against him. He did say that he may be able to contact a friend who could provide a private attorney for him. I didn't break any laws. I walk through open doors, he said. And his mother, Martha, was in the courtroom on Monday. ABC 15 describing she was unapologetic for her son's role in the violent and deadly disruption of Congress. Members had to be evacuated while trying to certify yada, yada, yada. Poor baby. Eats organic, but doesn't mind wearing buffalo horns. Chauncey DeVega pointing out, despite the dead animals he wore, his mother called him a patriot and the gentlest person I know. I don't have any organic food. There's no organic food. The barbarity of it all. Oh, my God. Where's my tempeh? I need me some organic tofu quick. There's not even any organic granola bars. Fuck you, buddy. With a white, and I do mean white hot poker. Jesus Christ. I wonder what the folks there in the stir with him think of that. Oh, he's on a patriotic hunger strike. Wait. Here comes an organic bologna sandwich with organic prison cheese. There you go, buddy. It's organic now. Gobble it up. No. I didn't do nothing wrong. I just walked through open doors. God bless America. Yeah, passive voice Jack says, yeah, that's sort of like when the gun just went off. That's exactly what that's like. Yes. God, the morons. And, of course, fortunately for us, it's Moran Monday, which takes us here at about 10 minutes past the second hour of the program. That's not a time check. Just noting where we are. We really do need something more than the run-of-the-mill Moran, and when you're looking for one of those, you can never go wrong with Sarah Hasselbeck, Hasselbeck Sandbags. She has been taken down by none other than her high school government teacher. Yeah. Her high school government teacher took her down for her failure to even vaguely understand the First Amendment in pissing and moaning about the parlor shutdown being an offense against the First Amendment. Among other things, she was moaning about having lost over 50,000 followers on Twitter when Twitter shut down a bunch of QAnon bots.
I've lost 50,000 followers this week. The radical left and their big tech allies cannot marginalize, censor, and silence the American people. This ain't China. This is the new 90 states of America, and we're a free country.
Yes, indeed, Sarah. The greatest country in the history of the world on Earth now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. But her high school teacher chimed in, Dana D. Derry. You were a student at Little Rock Central High when I taught AP government there, but you didn't take the advanced class. If you had, maybe you would better understand the First Amendment and the difference between limits on government and freedoms for private individuals. I've taught Sunday school, too. You didn't learn those lessons either. And then, because the maggots immediately attack, well, Mr. Derry had to set his account on Twitter to private. We talked about this some on Friday. Jesus, what a moron. Twitter is not the government. The First Amendment affects what the government can do. But you'd never know it to talk to them. And, of course, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags is, of course, a moron. Yeah, that's the beautiful part. You didn't take the advanced class part. That's another way of calling her a moron. Let's don't do that, Asa. Todd in South Carolina with a nerd. Do the courts of recent purview care about the absolute terms such as shall and will any longer? Well, only if they were used by the originalists. Yes. If the originalists said shall, sometimes it means shall if it has anything to do with guns, but everything else, it could be may or not at all, or maybe the... Because, see, you have to be a textualist, too. Goddamn frauds. And I'm awaiting a call from our buddy Parson Brown, because Parson wanted to chat a little bit. I always enjoy our conversations. I had a note from Les. Copy what Rico said, but with even less force than a feather could provide. I didn't catch the New Year's Eve program where you announced. I got it the following Titanic Tuesday when I wasn't getting why you were being addressed as until we, Queen Shelley and I, were directed to your new Facebook pic. The next day was an attempted coup d'etat. Probably, you know, volcanoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, insurrections. It's probably my fault. I mean... But needless to say, 21 is not allowing any rest for my brain. Congrats to you for finding your path, and best wishes to you and the loyal Viking warrior pharaoh princess. Thank you, Les. Thank you very kindly. That's really nice. And Hey, I'm still sorting it out, God knows. And will be for a long time. So, by the way, the video of the privileged white maggot crying about being put on a no-fly list is over on TikTok. If you see the video, this is what they do to us. They kicked me off the plane. They called me a fucking terrorist, and they fucking want to ruin my life. God, the heartbreak. I wonder what it feels like. No, I don't. Oh, the privilege. The privilege. Okay, I need to, give me a sec here. I need to find Parson and get him onto the conversation. There he is. Maybe, yeah, I think I've got Parson now. Well, thank you. Trey said, you're a person with perfect imperfections, like all of us. Well, isn't that about the truth? Yeah. And just further proof of her morality, a quick check-in with
Susan Collins,
who told Trita Parsi that as the Capitol was being overrun, her first thought was that, and this is a quote,
the Iranians had followed through on their threat to strike the Capitol.
Yeah. It's a, because, you know, maggots would never do that. Oh, that's what it was. Okay. So that's another one to add. It was Iranian fascist Antifa Black Lives Matter protesters in white face. Damn. As for Jake, the buffalo horn Ted Nugent cosplayer maggot, Arnold says, a hunger strike, it can kiss my blind ass. You don't get to say you're starving if you don't eat what's fucking prepared for you. Fuck you, eat the frozen poison, you stupid cocksucker. Yeah. Let me see. I thought I had Parson. Let me see if I've got him differently now. Is that you, Parson?
No, Bobby.
Okay, Reggie, I've got to... Yeah, Reggie, try back later. I've got a guest coming on and need to bring him on, okay? We'll talk soon, all right?
All right, man.
Thanks. Maybe we'll stay connected this time. Parson Brown, how the heck are you?
I'm good. You know, for a while, I thought I was talking with you. I was listening. I thought that my Skype was working properly, and then I realized that we weren't actually interacting.
Yeah, it sucks when that happens.
Anyway, yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome. Rob, like I said, I always enjoy our little chats.
I know. I just want to say hello. This is the first time that we have chatted Parson and Robin on the air.
Absolutely.
So, what a cool experience. And I'm so happy for you. I congratulate you.
Thank you.
And,
someday the congratulations will get kind of blasé, but they're damn sure not yet. I'm still deep in euphoria.
I hear you on that. But for right now, this is my first time to get to publicly say, that's awesome. You be you.
Well, thank you. I'm excited. You know, there's a life goes on, but it's going on just a little bit more freely, a little bit more refreshingly, a little bit more authentically, and a lot more pleasantly.
Yes. Well, that sounds wonderful. And that's what's so great about it. I listened to some of your interview with Trans Talk Raw. And I just
great folks. Nikki and Terry are both just wonderful people.
Oh, they were great. I had not listened to them until I saw the links come up through you, because I follow you, of course. And so listened to that conversation. And my biggest questions are, you know, how did you manage going through such a big move in life during the pandemic? Like, it just seems.
Well, that was the pandemic was a big part of why.
Yeah, I was wondering that. I feel like a lot of people have found themselves or found out things about others. You know, we've all had a lot of time to soul search.
Yeah, and in my particular case, I just came to the realization that if this thing, and it is everything it is said to be, it is deadly, it is dangerous, and it's, you know, it can strike anywhere and anyone, that if I was going to be at hazard for that, I was finally going to be who the hell I am.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, and by the way, I just have to share this with you. I just got this note from the Horns Den Mother in California. That's our buddy Matt. The cosplay man, you know, the guy with the Ted Nugent cosplay, you know, buffalo horn. I mean, I've seen Ted wear that kind of shit on stage. You know, Nugent used to perform in a fucking loincloth, for Christ's sakes. but cosplay man Matt says, okay, that's it. I hate to admit it, but he just may play for my team. Great makeup, low-rise pants, and a look that no straight man could pull off. Now he's organic only. Shaking my head. And that gets a big old cow.
No, I agree. The one thing that I can't... that was quite a costume. I was disgusted by the behavior that took place there. Do not get me wrong. But... I mean, those horns and
he put work into it, of course. But let's not overlook the fact that that's also cultural appropriation, because that ain't exactly white folks costumes.
Yeah, I work on films in Los Angeles now, and I think about like that would have taken some effort to find.
Yeah, no kidding. So if it's not like, you know, deep cover subject matter, what are you working on these days, Parson?
Some of it is a little deep cover, but that's okay. I did work on, the whole industry got really put at a standstill last year.
Hammered.
You know, and not just the film and television industry. I usually work in television these days, and there was just a day I remember. It was a rainy day in California. I believe it was like when the NBA was announcing that they weren't going to be doing their thing anymore. And one by one, like large institutions were, you know, addressing COVID and things were shutting down. And I just remember like folks all over the city were like being like, yeah, we're going to shut down for a couple days and we'll figure it out next week. Next thing you know, months this city suffered with no one being able to do the work that we do, and it's freelance, so it's, you know, for a majority of people that work in the industry, for folks that don't know, it's one gig after another. It's already the hustle is difficult enough, so you know, when all of these shows started shutting down, we had to sort of scramble and make other plans. But I did work on Naked and Afraid. I am allowed to say that. I can't disclose too much more. But I do work on that show periodically. And there will be an awesome Naked and Afraid XL Legends episode coming up in the near future that everybody should check out. It's on Discovery Channel and Discovery Plus. I think that's probably what I'm allowed to say.
Cool.
Because I remember when last we spoke, you were kind of bouncing around from place to place because the shutdown had hit, and you were just sort of trying to stabilize your existence.
Yeah, no, and you know, to a degree that's, you know, more stable now. I mean, I was very thankful to pick up some good work and work with, you know, Battleview Productions and the Discovery Channel, great companies to work for. And lots of other people did not have those opportunities. But it's still, you know, now LA is back into this, you know, we're in this dire situation. So I feel like some did it well and some did not. And, you know,
well, it's been, I guess it makes sense, Parson, because of the size of the population out there, but the number of people throwing the number of videos of people throwing fits over masks coming out of California, it's like, oh my God, I knew there's that old gag about how Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh in the West and Philly in the East and Alabama in the middle. I guess there's an Alabama aspect to California too.
It's interesting how, and don't, like, I'm not an expert on California because I've been here for just over 2 years, staying mostly in Los Angeles. But I've had the opportunity to travel a bit, and, you know, some of these old canyon cattle towns are diehard Trump country and, did not respond well to the mask, to the PPE and the regulations and the guidelines or, you know, any of that. And so and there's also limited, but there's been success stories and disasters when it comes to production. You know, depending on how seriously, producers and production companies take the pandemic, you know, that can make a big difference. That can shut a show down or a film all the way down. If you've probably heard about Tom Cruise's rant at his crew. If not, he went famously just I believe last week or like a week or two ago, just irate at his crew for not social distancing, not wearing masks while on set. And
that actually actually surprised me a little bit, Parson. Because
You know what?
Because Scientologist that he is, I'm surprised he acknowledges that it's real.
Right. I do think that Tom Cruise is nuts, but he made a very valid, I think it was a very dramatic you know, performance, but he's Tom Cruise, whatever, but he wasn't wrong. The shows that I've worked on since the pandemic have been, you know, Discovery had a very strong, very strict protocol for how we handled, you know, PPE and social distancing and keeping within our COVID bubble while we were in production. And it's tough. Challenging, and the mentality that I took into it is like, look, as long as everybody does their best and tries their hardest, that's the best we can do. But then you see people slacking off and you're like, you know, I try extra hard to keep my mask on in such and such a place, or follow this rule and this guideline, or not go to this area where we're not supposed to be, or, you know, and you see some people just slack off, and it's not that they're like terrible people, but it's like we have an additional responsibility now as professionals and as people, you know, when we sign that contract to work together. If you're on your own, you can be an idiot and, you know, argue about not wearing a mask. But if you're working with other people who are just trying to do their job, make their living, and feel safe doing their work, then, yeah, it's either you follow the rules or you got to go.
How's that? I mean, how's that hard to comprehend? By the way, you've got a Naked and Afraid fan. Jack in Shreveport says, I got one of their T-shirts.
Oh, nice. Actually, this show, of anything I've ever worked on, I got more swag from this than anything else. They gave me a face mask. I have a Naked and Afraid face mask, and a another little like scarf thing and a sweatshirt. They even made T-shirts. They made T-shirts that said Team Parson on them. I think I may have made an impression.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I got more stuff from this gig than I. From anything I've ever worked on. I don't know if maybe just they have a deal with what's that, Vistaprint or something, but they sent me a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's cool. And speaking of Vistaprint, I'm looking at a new set of business cards over here.
I know, but who does business cards anymore?
Well,
you
have
pandemic.
To. But you have to in a place like D.C., so, you know, we're anticipating that at some point in time we're going to be back there and we're going to be working on the ACAC some more. And gone are my Bob Kincaid business cards, and my business cards have transitioned too. Yay.
I hear that, Robin, totally. But you did hit the nail on the head. Like, I cannot wait until I can get back to Capitol Hill for multiple reasons. I feel like it's. And I mean that in a strong but positive way. You know, the work that you and I used to do and the stuff that I've done independently of that, like, I miss having blisters on my feet walking from, you know, building to building.
And you know, you've done that work and you've seen the Capitol Police, and that's kind of why I brought the topic up. We were always taught, because, you know, you have to be taught how to do this work in a place like D.C., and we were taught by some very, very good people who knew the lay of the land and knew how to do the job, and a big part of that was always be respectful of the Capitol Police, because they can ruin your day in a minute.
Absolutely, and that's something that I, you know, my work being an activist started with, I mean, officially, I guess we could say, one of my biggest things that thrust me into the political realm was going to the Week in Washington that we used to do with the Alliance for Appalachia, lobbying to end mountaintop removal, of course. And that's where I met so many like powerful voices. But it was that training. We had a lobby training. We had days of going through the motions of how you navigate the Congress, how you run a meeting. And then in other situations beyond that, you know, I went on to organize and help organize in Chicago and demonstrations throughout Appalachia, and back in D.C. you have as well. There are trainings as to how you do nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yeah, it is not something that you just learn naturally. In fact, you and I met in D.C. for the first time.
We did. And so at those trainings where, and I was very naive when I first came into D.C. and I found it so fascinating and so compelling that, all right, being an activist, you know, is you need to do it right. You could be professional about how you.
Well, it was absolutely necessary that we be professional because we did not, because we knew that we were carrying anti-Appalachian stereotypes with us riding on our shoulders as if visible everywhere we went.
And as many times and as riled up as we had all, you know, had every right to be in it. Like, I think of all the marches and all the rallies and all the, even the wildest, like, demonstrations that I've either covered or participated in some way or another. That violent energy was not there. And if it was, then those were the people that we shut down. You know, like that. It was always.
I mean, you were there for Appalachia Rising, right? Weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were. We helped organize that
we
together.
We had literally thousands of people in front of the White House in D.C. Bunch of people got arrested, but nobody was violent.
We technically, like, we stormed several buildings. You know, we made three stops on that historic march. We went to the EPA, surrounded the EPA, and our people took to the stairs. They heard us. They knew we were there. It's just so different to think about. I think about that day. I've thought about it ever since I witnessed what was going on in D.C. because I know how the energy of a big group like that can get. And you do get wound up in the moment and, you know, that, like, tribal or herd. I don't know that, like, mentality, but mob mentality is not what we were. There were angry people there. People that are had good reasons to be angry.
Precisely. Not just people butthurt over an election, people whose very lives were put at hazard.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine if, you know, that's like if me and Larry Gibson went and busted out the windows of the EPA building. What a disgraceful demonstration that would have been. That would never have happened with any of the folks that, like, that I learned from, that I appreciate so much, you know, that have been my mentors over the years. Like, I they just showed up and acted like assholes.
That's what these maggots were. Well, A, that's who they are to begin with. But B, that's what they were sent there to be. They didn't have a real cause. They were sent there to try to intimidate the federal government.
They had a fake cause.
And the majority of us who voted for Joe Biden, we were supposed to sit down and shut up and let them rampage because they brought their freedom protecting guns and their buffalo hats. Yeah. Oh God, people are having a lot of fun with buffalo hat guy this evening, Parson.
They're have fun with buffalo hat guy for a long time.
Or Kim just wrote organic hunger strike. Well, looks like they'll need to force feed organic boy through the nose, like what was done to many Gitmo detainees and Native Americans held in prison. Good fucking riddance to 2020. Scott in San Diego says horned hat guy. Hemlock is organic, just saying. That gets a jingle, yeah.
I don't know if anyone has seen the meme. And I don't know who made it, but God bless them. There is a meme that somebody photoshopped. It's the Tiger King's newest husband, and it's the horned guy. And I don't know why simple things like that just make me laugh so much. I thought it was very funny.
I found one that delighted me. There was there was a video from back in the Obama administration of Obama kind of leaning back in his chair. He's got his phone in front of him and he's looking at the screen of his phone, and the tweet caption just says, "Guess who can still tweet, motherfucker?" And Michelle walks in and snatches his phone away from him. That was just fun. But this is the one that slayed me. You're an animation fan, aren't you?
Yeah, we work in animation.
So back in the 90s, I mean, you remember the Animaniacs. They've been brought back on Hulu now, but I'm talking about the classic Animaniacs.
I can go back further than that.
Well, me too, but this one in particular, because the girl from Knoxville, "My name's Elizabeth, and I just got maced," right?
Oh, yeah. Elvira.
Yeah, we were storming the Capitol. It's a revolution, man.
Well, somebody took the Animaniacs theme on TikTok and did something absolutely wonderful with it, Parson. Check this out. It's just the audio. It's the Animaniacs theme.
We're Animani, totally insane.
They pushed me out and maced me.
Animaniacs, those are the best.
They pushed me and maced me.
That is great work. I'm actually jealous of whoever put that together. Like, props to them.
And then there was the guy climbing up the exterior wall of the Capitol.
There was so much climbing.
Right. But with the Mario music behind him. And then and then he falls.
Oh. There's a lot of content out there, and I've tried to watch the actual news and then also keep up with all the, like, there's so much stuff trickling in because that's what happens when there's a complete shit show.
You got the maggots climbing up the walls. It's captioned Super USA Brothers, and it's just video game sound effects. That's all, but it's still hilarious. That was after he fell.
Aww. That actually made me really. I felt some real emotion during that. I could visualize the whole thing. I don't need to see it.
Yeah, because it happens in your mind. So you work in animation?
Well, I've been doing a lot of different things. Since the last time we spoke, to survive, we've adapted a little bit. I am very fortunate to have, a place to stay and some work to do. And a lot of people don't have that, but so where I am, I'm basically in a collective of very talented people in LA, and we're working on a whole lot of different stuff, some of which is animation. I'm developing an animated, I guess what I could say is I'm developing what could turn into something bigger, but there's going to be a Possum Brown gracing the
Possum Brown
is coming. We've been doing a lot of research with virtual reality here too, they're separate projects, but oh my god, have you ever done virtual reality?
Please, I've never done this on air before. Please, let me voice Possum Brown. I want to be the VO person for Possum Brown.
You can't, because guess who is?
You.
Of course, it's me. I'm Possum Brown. That's capital O, apostrophe, Possum Brown, spelled regular.
Okay, well, there's got to be some sort of a friend in there. I'm sorry, I have to insist, Carson.
There's a friend for you. There is a friend for you. I'll get you. Absolutely. No, if you, we'll find a place for you, Robin. Absolutely.
Because I can do that hillbilly shit too.
I've been wanting to do animation and narration work, and I've wanted to collaborate on weird stuff with you for years. You know that. So I'm totally want to do that.
Oh, I've wanted to do animation voice forever.
I can't believe you haven't. What is going on?
I've done a lot of other things, but no, never that. I mean, I grew up on Warner Brothers cartoons, for God's sakes. Those voices all live in my head. And now, and I'm really not doing it yet. I'm working on it off air. Now I have to go and find a replacement for this voice. Because,
well, what are you going to do? All right. May I ask, well, what are you going to do with your voice? I love your voice.
Well, I know, but it just doesn't go with her.
Okay.
So I mean, there are no hard and fast rules. There are trans women who don't do anything about their voice, but a lot do, and it's really funny. It's kind of weird, really, because I can do voices, and I can pitch up, and I can pitch down, and stay with it as long as I need to be. But those are all characters, and this isn't a character. This is me.
Yeah. Well, and that's so.
And
that's
so
why
trying,
I
and so only... and so and so trying to pitch it up. You know, you don't want to sound like Minnie Mouse or Marilyn Monroe or Susan Collins. It's a process of searching and seeking and finding, and it's fascinating and weird, and I've been doing a little bit of work with it, and Agnes is there to say, no, that sucks, quit that, or that sounds pretty nice. And so, I mean, there's so much that goes into it.
Wow. I mean, that really is fascinating. I mean, it's great to be able to talk with you as a friend about, you know, little like details like that. And 'cause, you know, that's like going to be stuff like that stuff you're working on. And I just, like, I support you so much, but I love your radio. Like, I've kind of looked up to your radio voice.
Oh, no, I mean, that's why I got the first radio job, you know, in the little crummy gospel radio station. Yeah.
I want to work at a crummy gospel radio station.
Oh, it was some of the best times I ever had, you know, ripping reeds and queuing up vinyl. And yeah, it was a hot time.
I worked at a crummy radio station in, I won't say what it is, but it was a lot of fun until they basically told me I was too liberal to be there.
Yeah. You know, if I hadn't gone off to college, I would have eventually been fired. And I kind of sealed my fate on my last night there, because instead of using the national anthem and, oh, I've slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings, sunward I've climbed, instead of doing all that, I just said good night and goodbye, and on a gospel radio station played the Jimi Hendrix version of the Star-Spangled Banner. I think they got calls for weeks.
But, you know, how is that? Like,
what was that devil music?
That song in itself, it really is a prayer. I got in trouble for making fun of Maryland drivers.
Please drive gently.
I was doing the news, and they didn't want me to cover any news that was, for example, there was a chemical spill in the Potomac River, which probably nobody ever heard about because I wasn't allowed to cover it. But they would rather me cover, like, high school girls volleyball. And then I made fun of Maryland drivers one time when we were doing a story about Tesla was testing their driverless cars in Northern Virginia and around the Beltway. Made a couple zingers, pissed off a couple Marylanders, and anyway, wasn't a fit.
Sometimes you just realize you've got to, you know, move on.
It was fun, though. I enjoyed every second of it up until the day that I left, because I knew I people were calling in. They'd never heard anybody actually have fun on this station. They were so uptight. My God, I feel bad for them.
I got to do the regular guy would be off sometimes, so I would get to do the intro for Larry King Live and TBS News Watch and TBS Weather Watch. And
did you ever do high school girls volleyball?
No, but I did. Once upon a time, I was the color commentary person on high school football.
Oh.
I
was the videographer for our high school football team, and I don't know anything about football. And
well, speaking of videography, I do have a question, because going back to your activism days.
Let's pivot.
Everybody do the pivot. There's got to be a ton of footage still out there. Is there ever going to be? And I'm not being a cynic. Is there ever going to be a director's cut or a final release of the Topless America project?
I'm glad you asked about that because...
Well, tell people what that is because it sounds a little salacious.
Yeah, of course. It always needs a bit of an explanation. Topless America is a project that we started over a decade ago to draw attention to mountaintop removal coal mining. When we were very young, a collaborative of artists, we were based out of Chicago, but we were from all over the country. And the work that we did through we eventually became an organization, and our mission was to spread awareness of mountaintop removal coal mining, to do to document activism, to study the intricacies of a movement and the people that make a grassroots effort really tick. And the answer is, it's I think about it every day, and I'm working with a new collaborative of people, and yeah, I do want to get that stuff out there, but I think it's more prevalent than ever. I think it's more important than ever. A lot of what we did back then, it just in like from our previous conversation, as we're watching this, like whatever you want to call it, we can call it insurrection, we can call it a riot. It was
no, it wasn't a riot. No.
It was
because if you start out with the definition that Dr. King gave, a riot is the voice of the unheard. Well, those privileged little pissant maggots cannot complain that they haven't been heard, because they've been menacing people with their goddamn guns and screaming in people's faces for right. 4 years. So it can't be a riot. Not under that definition. It can't be.
Fair enough. Understood. And we'll scratch that scratch riot from the record. But what I do really want to do, especially now, is bring Topless America's interviews and some of the – we literally asked people and went and talked to them about what it means to be a movement, what it means to be an activist.
Yeah. That's why I brought this up. I remember what you guys were working on, and it seems like in a time like this, what real activism looks and sounds like might actually be beneficial.
I absolutely agree. And maybe you can help us, because I literally, to the point of, got the box out. The drives are plugged in. I have Topless America like up on in my workstation, because we had this conversation over the last few weeks. I was like explaining to my friends here in California. Some of them have never been to DC. I was like, this is not what a protest is. This is not okay. That, you see, the
yeah, that
building,
was that. That's the thing. That, that what that was, Parson, was a hissy. That was a hissy. That was a mass conniption that turned bloody and homicidal. I think by the time that
they were angry, like, you know, like we were angry, people like you and Larry Gibson and Judy Bonds and my good friend Terry Blanton and so many others who have suffered, seriously suffered, due to mountaintop removal and other like environmental injustices and abuses, had damn good reason to be angry. But yet we showed up, trained ourselves to constrain our anger, and did even in the thralls of some very intense moments, I've never seen any of who I would consider like our people act like that.
No, because we would never have been allowed to come back. No organization that we were affiliated with would have gotten within a country mile of us if we had behaved that way.
Because we all, because of there was a common trust that we, you know, were there for the for a common purpose, and that if one of us messes, like, you know, it's like even if one of us insults a congressman at a bar by mistake that later that night.
Yeah, it almost sounds like you're speaking from experience, Parson, but no.
I may be speaking from a friend's experience.
Really? Yes.
No, but I mean, you know, DC is a city that you know well. You know that everywhere you go, back when we were allowed to go places, you be careful what you say in any public spot because everybody is connected to somebody.
Yeah.
And that was part of our training. I remember I worked one of the probably the second most disturbing thing that I've done on in DC. I'm going a little bit on a tangent, but just to like give you some perspective. I worked for a show on CNN. It's called United Shades of America. We went and
called. Oh, that was a great show. You worked on that? Cool.
I did work on that for a period. Yes. And one of the episodes I worked on was the episode where we went to the Reagan building in Washington, D.C. for a gathering of the alt-right, headed by Richard Spencer himself. And if you've ever seen the show, the host is, you know, like 6-something foot tall, like very, like large black man, hilarious Kamau W. Bell.
Yeah.
Really, it was like sweet, funny person, but very smart. And like, we had a like biracial crew, or I mean, a multiracial crew. It was bringing, it felt like taking folks into the lion's den. It was such a, from a logistics and like as a, from a producer standpoint, like I work in production. Logistics, safety, stuff like that are what I like usually help with. And I'm like, oh my God, we were sitting there listening to, that was the same rally that there was video later leaked to the news where they were like, hail Hitler, hail Trump.
I remember that. Like, I'm sure we all do. Yeah. It's like, hey, I think I know where we're going with this.
We all got called to a meeting because they're like, who the hell leaked the video? It was not our crew. But I was in the room. That was a very scary. That was at the beginning of all this. So I knew what was so scary about that was that these folks traveled from all over.
All 50 states.
And from overseas. Some of them were from Scotland, Ireland, England. And it made me think of, I mean, it absolutely made me, it was organized in a comparable way to how, you know, the Alliance for Appalachia and other coalitions that I've worked with, how we did our lobby weeks, how we did our, you know, how we brought people together. And I'm seeing this play out. You know, I'm doing my job, trying to keep people safe and trying to keep the show going, but also just like, oh my God, there is an organized contingent of humanity that is, they've got the Reagan building, all the security guards for the, like, you know, like most of the security in the building were black. There were counter protests outside. They had these people chanting white power, and then black security guards ushering them to a safer exit.
Jesus. You know, that reminds me of something. Were you there when we had the one and only hearing in the Senate on mountaintop removal with the Appalachia Restoration Act? There was a Senate hearing.
I wasn't there. I wasn't in the room.
Well, it was. It, I mean, it's an excellent introduction to Capitol Police because we had to attend a teaching on how to even do this. And once we got there, right. We were told, you know, you can't sit down in the hallways. If the minute you sit down, they will arrest you because you'll be engaged in protest. Now we're talking about people who walked all the way to the Senate office buildings. It was Dirksen, and had to be there hours in advance just because they were sending busloads of coal whores. And
yes,
we wanted to be in there.
They often do.
Yeah, so. You know, they got a paid day off from work, and they got lunch in boxes from heaven,
trip up there.
From heavenly hams and whatnot, and they all laughed at, and so we wanted to make sure we were in there, and just to finish this real quick, we had a Capitol Police officer who apparently thought that he was auditioning for the Arlie Ermey role in Full Metal Jacket, who walked up and down in front of us, more or less screaming at us, telling us what the rules were. And we'd already been schooled on it, but we knew they were serious. And it was, right. you will be quiet. You will not sit down. If you sit down, we will remove you and you will be charged with trespass and you don't want that. And it's like, okay, I get it, sure.
And when you make the decision that you're going to participate in an action like that, you need to be – in D.C., what I've found, because I'm sure you've seen I've seen actions and things in other places across the country. D.C. is prepared generally. They know how – they have a protocol. They are used to protesters. And we've – protested in many different ways there. I remember the day that we did a congressional sit-in with I believe it was Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, maybe some other states. We representatives were folks like Terry Blanton sat in and were arrested, and we dealt directly with — I was covering this for Topless America. We dealt directly with the Capitol Police. They did the same thing. They told us the rules. We had also had a training the day before. We knew how to act and how not to act for everybody's safety. And eventually, they knew that they were going to have to arrest the certain people that were staying there. And we're like, we love Kentucky. We're really big Wildcats fans, but you're like, at a certain point, we're going to take you away. And Terry Blanton's like, that's okay. So they sang Amazing Grace and were arrested. I mean,
it's how it works.
And we made an impact that day on that, like in that office, whether you agree with it or not, or, whatever you want to say. Nobody got hurt. Nobody was disrespectful.
No glass was broken.
No glass was broken.
No podiums were stolen.
People were mad. But people were angry, and they did have those feelings. But they came there and expressed through the process of democracy in the proper, in the proper way.
Appropriate form, sure. Yeah. Hey, let me sorry, let me shift gears again.
Sure.
So I'm excited to know that that maybe some of that footage may get out there. I think now there's never been a better time. I mean, I think you really are primed for that to go somewhere and do something if you can.
We'd like to release it sooner than later, and we'd really like to do something and just release it as an internet series, and maybe we can talk about that later. But yes, it's absolutely not forgotten.
Well, I'm glad I was tapped into the Parson Brown zeitgeist and kind of saw that coming. tell me, how's your podcast going?
Well, we put it on hold for a while because — let me back it up. We started the podcast. Frame of View is our podcast. You can find it on YouTube. we did it as we started it really as an experiment when Los Angeles shut down and we all found ourselves. I was in a house of industry professionals with nothing to do. So we started making podcasts and experimenting with virtual reality production and making little animated marsupials. So that was one of the things that we started doing. But I want to pick it up again because I think that having conversations with people like you and folks that, I mean, you know the, I mean, you got to know the feeling that you get from talking with people and learning, like, you know, gaining their perspective.
It's electric. It's electric. It absolutely is.
So I love having conversations with people and I love, you know, if asking the, you know, bizarre questions or, and just what I found, what I find the best is when I ask people questions, it's like, sometimes you ask people questions that you know the answer to already and you just need to get that answer. But sometimes I'm just like, no, but really, tell me the answer. Like, what do you think about this? And those are my, like, best times when I talk to people. So we're doing Frame of View starting in the next week or two. And I would love to, I think, I'd love to incorporate our conversation into one of our upcoming episodes.
By all means, help yourself.
But I know that you you guys are great at archiving, so I'll get with your folks about that. What I really want to do is just try to help people heal. Try to figure out where everybody is at mentally. Because we've all been isolated in one way or another, and there's so much to talk about. We started out talking with folks from Children's Hospital in Denver about the pandemic, with what we do then. We spoke with Dr. Alan Lichtman of American University, who wrote a book called he's written several books, but one of which predicting Trump's impeachment.
Yeah, he predicted Trump's election and then predicted his impeachment.
Yes, he did. So, and we spoke with it. Yeah, the argument for impeachment. Great book, great guy, and I love him and his wife. So we had him on, and lots of other folks, and just covered a lot of different stuff. And I can't get enough of it. And while I was working on the road, I realized how much I missed talking to people who have things to share. So we're going to do more of that. It's called The Frame of View.
And so far it's on YouTube?
It's on YouTube right now.
Excellent. Jack in Shreveport just wanted to make sure. Yes, I'm talking to Parson Brown. Yes.
I'm Parson Brown. Hello.
Yes, Parson Brown, videographer Parson Brown, content creator Parson Brown, podcaster Parson Brown, activist. You have many hats.
Strange and powerful wizard.
Indeed. And by the way,
you also are multi talented, multifaceted person. That's why I appreciate our conversations so much and all the work that you've done over the years.
Yeah, the one place that I've really fallen down and I'm just no good at all is what you're so good at. I don't get video. I don't get video editing. I don't have the patience. I suck at it. And I keep promising myself one of these days I'm going to learn to do it, because it might actually come in handy, you know, now that I feel like I'm one of the last actual radio no video programs out there.
You know what? Because I got these folks around me that are so tech savvy, I'm not used to it because I'm with you. I'm more of a voice person. And I don't know. There's just something about freaking.
Well, audio only is more. To me, Parson, audio only is more intimate. because you're not being force-fed images. So you're actually doing brain work at the same time you're listening.
Yeah, I mean, it can be done. I do work in on the other side as well, but there's something about just having a look at now. I'm getting into my radio voice, just like, you know.
This is CNN.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Luke, I am your father.
I know he didn't say that. I did. Yes. Hand shot first. All of that stuff.
And I did that line for a weird promo for this thing one time, and I was like, "That's not the line." And they're like, "Doesn't matter." And I'm like, "Okay."
but I love the theatrical aspects of it. I did some VO work a few years ago for a history series, not History Channel, just a history series, in which I created the voice, what I thought maybe the voice of Walt Whitman might have been.
Oh, can I hear it?
No, I only did it once, and it's just, it was a one-off, but it's
neat. You can't just tease with that.
Well, I mean, sorry, but, you know, we have these cues out there. For instance, they say that Thomas Jefferson spoke in a high, reedy voice. You know, we've made a god out of him, but, you know, he shambled around the brand new White House in a bathrobe and slippers, never delivered a State of the Union address. He just wrote it out and sent it in. Was antisocial, didn't like to be in crowds, and again, spoke with a high, reedy voice. So in my mind,
did he have like condition, or was it just that's what his voice
just,
was?
No, it's just who he was. I mean, it's just who he was. In point of fact, I think, you know, there would be a brilliant and beautiful irony. Actually, when I think of Thomas Jefferson's high, reedy voice, I think of Thomas Jefferson speaking with Michael Jackson's voice.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
My mind just went to a lot of different places there. Okay. Actually, oh my God, you've changed my entire existence thinking of Thomas Jefferson.
Jefferson never heard a shot fired in anger and never fired one during the Revolution. He spent most of it running away. And so I can almost hear him saying, "I'm a lover, not a fighter." Yeah. Wow. How did we get here?
I don't know who drove, but
I just hope we can find the keys and go home, man.
Yeah.
Anybody got $5 for gas? Yeah.
So what else? Completely wrong with the world that we can bitch about for a minute.
Well, no, I think we got plenty. And what really, you know, worries me is, it's like the New Jersey congresswoman that our friend Darlene brought up earlier this evening. She's got COVID-19 now, and she's got symptoms because she had to shelter in place among a bunch of Republican maggot members of Congress who wouldn't wear a goddamn mask.
I saw that coverage. It's ridiculous. How disrespectful. I mean, that's just, I don't know.
Oh, and adding to our conversation, Mark just wrote in and said, question, do you know the difference between television and radio? Answer, the pictures are better in radio.
Yeah.
Because they're coming from the inside of your mind. You know, the calls are coming from inside the house. And what I find fascinating about the story of her getting COVID is that she had already had round one of her vaccine. But as I've discussed on this program, it takes a while for the immunity to build up in your body.
Right.
And so one of the things that scares me, Parson, is that when the vaccine is more widely distributed, people are going to say, "Woohoo, I got my vaccine," and they're going to rip off their mask and they're going to run around a-hugging and LARPing and smolicking and gravelating all over each other and lollygagging, and then we'll get a new hotspot out of it. Because, Wednesday will be a week since what went down in D.C., the assault on the Capitol. I think that's a better, there's our word, the assault on the Capitol.
It is. It was an assault on the Capitol.
And so about another week from this Wednesday and the summary effects of COVID, because these were all of them mask hole COVIDiots, we'll have various hot spots there. And, you know, they've used this cell phone tracking technology to trace the disease itself. And it's gonna be all over the place. I mean, think about organic Buffalo Boy, who's in the stir somewhere in D.C. and probably sitting there spewing particles. Who knows?
Oh my God! Like I look at some of that footage, and it's like the way that they're screaming. I'm like, oh my! Like,
yeah, it's
that's a lot of droplets. That's a whole lot of droplets. They're just.
Yeah, and there's a Georgia Tech tool that predicts the likelihood of COVID being in any group. And for that, it had to be 100%. So, you know, and who knows, one of those people may have brought the new, more virulent strain through. And I'm not trying yeah. to engage in fear-mongering, but you have to deal with realities, and that's one of them. So God knows what's going to happen coming out of that. Because right. the difference could not be more night and day. When the protests were taking place in D.C. that wound up with federal troops gassing them and pepper spraying them, those were people who were mostly wearing masks. And so the spread was not as bad. You don't have that here. These people are proudly maskless right. because, you know, Jesus can't see my face if I got a mask on, and I want Jesus to see my face.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's been a big thing for me through this entire situation is because, you know, we've gone over this several times and I'm going to go over again. Like, I love a good protest, you know, like I appreciate a protest. I am there. Like, I like to be there. And I've, you know, so many situations in the last, you know, couple of years, but more recently, like obviously with COVID spread, is like, yeah, I would totally be in the streets, but no, we shouldn't be in the streets. It pisses
me off when I see other parts of the world slowly getting back to normal because, you know, they had their shit together. It's embarrassing to me as a citizen of the country that put human beings on the moon that we can't get everybody to wear a fucking face mask.
Oh my God, how many days are we at countdown wise? What is it? The 11th? Okay.
Yeah, we're 9 days as Sparky said in the chat room. We're 9 days till the other shoe drops, but with the fact that
it's not all gonna be healed overnight, you know, anybody with, you know. We know that, but, like, good God, I feel like I'll sleep a little better.
Well, yeah, but it's what's between now and then that, you know, gives you the dribbles. Because they're saying they're going to do it again. And they may be mad enough to start shooting guns. Just for the sake of, not argument, well, but
bases and,
what happens if they're mad enough now that they bring guns and they start shooting at people?
Yeah, when do we cross the line where you're just bringing guns to show that you can, and when you're bringing guns and you're so mad that you're like showing that you cross that line? That is where we're dangerously close to. We're there. I mean, this is not healthy behavior for a nation. I'm concerned.
No, and I don't know if we, well,
I always try to be a bridge builder, and I have through this whole, I mean, you know me, like I've tried to be a liaison between different perspectives with so many folks that I know. But I'm at a point now that I'm just like, I feel like we've lost some folks. I don't know if there's any bringing some people back from this, you know, well, hateful past.
Yeah, but I don't know if they were ever, you know, I don't know that we lost them, Parson, because
found out that we never had them.
Yeah,
and
they've been gone the whole time. You know, one of the great and saddest mistakes that we have made over the course of the past couple of generations is thinking that somehow the civil rights struggle was a manifest success, and that that all the nastiest parts of it had gone away. Well, you know what? There's really, to my mind, A, no, we didn't, and B, there's not a hell of a lot of difference between somebody who would plant a bomb in a Baptist church in Birmingham in 1963 and kill little girls, and somebody who would go rampaging through the Capitol because they were looking to kill the Speaker of the House. I mean, the mindset is identical, and it comes from the same place.
And I've traveled, you know, I do a lot of work in rural areas, and it seems like that's very much where our, you know, there's a lot of Trump support. I come from a rural area. I have had conversations.
Yeah, you're a proud son of old Virginia.
I am. I come from the Shenandoah Valley, and I have people that I love and respect and grew up with, and you know, have just really surprised me, shocked me, ashamed me in some cases, like, because I'm like, wow, I did not realize that you were like, what is it? Like, you were only, were you only being nice and friendly to me because I'm like a middle class white guy? Because now it seems like you.
Yeah, hey, you're like one of us. Else. Yeah. And by the way, nomination for understatement of the year comes from Matt in San Francisco. Your words, this is not healthy behavior for a nation. 2000%, says Matt. So you got that going for you,
yeah.
Which is nice.
Matt, thank you. I didn't even, That was just being honest, man, because I feel it. I feel it every day, as I'm sure you do and we all do. And they do too. They are feeling the same angst, the folks that participated in that rally. And we can't just write off, as ridiculous as that behavior was, like, we can't just write off this obvious, you know, like, part of our society. We have to deal with this. We have to find a way to... We got to figure it out culturally, or it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. It may get worse either way.
Well, and you don't write them off, but you have to acknowledge who they are. Most of them.
Calling a spade a spade, number one.
Yeah, I'm sad to say, but I think in most cases, Parson, they're not going to self-rehabilitate. Because they don't think they're in the wrong. They're thoroughly convinced that they're in the right, because their minds have been poisoned every day, year after year, by people who have cynically used them for their own ends. And to get someone to the point where they can look up and say that to themselves is a level of psychological and psychiatric heroism that most people can't reach.
Did you see Arnold Schwarzenegger's message?
Yes, I did.
How do you feel about that?
You know, I always thought that Arnold Schwarzenegger may be the last liberal Republican in America. Or, you know, he's certainly more in the vein of a Maryland's Governor Hogan or the governor of Massachusetts. They're Republicans too, but they're not walking around picking their teeth with their toenail clippings.
Right.
I don't know if the GOP is rehabilitable, simply because I've got enough historical perspective to recognize that a lot of the stuff that people are all too easily referring to as Trumpism isn't. It's the Republican Party as we have known it for generations. They have, and I know it's not fashionable to say this, Parson, but they have always been this bad. Okay, the National Review in the early 1960s, publishing broadside after broadside against the civil rights movement. All right, George H.W. Bush, in his lone term in the House of Representatives, voting against either the Civil Rights Act or the Voting Rights Act. They are who we thought they were. And for us to play this mental game with ourselves where we say, well, you know, it just got bad. I mean, it just got a fuck. It wasn't that long ago. Sorry, throwing the F-bombs around. I remember the teabaggers. They were this nasty. The maggots are just rebranded teabaggers. And the teabaggers were just rebranded John Birchers and Klansmen.
And should have saw it more clearly then. I was covering Tea Party rallies from the beginning. And, man.
I mean, you know, one of the first things I thought,
it evolved into what we have now.
Well, I don't know how much evolving went down, because I think they've always been this way. One of the first things, one of the first things I thought of when I saw the violence last week on Wednesday, I remembered a teabagger rally in D.C. at the time when Scott Brown was running for re-election to the Senate against Elizabeth Warren. And there were a bunch of teabaggers gathered on the mall in D.C., and one of them had a sign that had, I think, a picture of Scott Brown. Remember, he was the only member of the Senate to ever pose naked in Playboy or Playgirl.
Right.
The Senator Cheesecake. But the sign had a picture of him that says, "If Brown can't do it," and then there was a picture of a pistol, and it said, "Browning can." Browning being a famous manufacturer of firearms.
Right.
So the idea was there. And, you know, in the run-up to the 2016 election, the references to Second Amendment remedies.
All right. Well, as long as we're talking on, like, and I'm going to do this again just a little bit, like, about foes, let's just bring up Faux Joe Manchin. When, do you remember the campaign ad that he did when he shot through what was that bill?
That was Waxman Markey.
Yes, the climate bill. I don't even know what to do with him anymore.
He's living in the limelight right now because he knows that he's the swinging vote in the Senate.
Yeah.
And today, I mean, sometimes he surprises me.
He does. He does sometimes. And I don't like the name calling. I just want to, like, go back a little bit. I call him Fojo. I don't like.
Oh, well, we've been calling him Baloney.
I do feel like he's a faux Democrat. He's just a Democrat when he feels like it. Give me a break.
Well, who was it? It was somebody in our movement who initiated the term Baloney Joe.
Oh, I have never actually heard that, but I mean, yeah.
Bazooka Joe, Baloney Joe, yeah. But today he said that Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley have blood on their hands.
Oh, he's a Democrat today.
Oh, Jesus, wait a minute. Yeah, he's
noted.
Yeah, he's wearing his he's wearing his Democrat drag today. But you know what? He's right in that context. Now, he was dead wrong a few days ago when he said,
Well, I just don't think that we're going to get America back to work by giving people $2,000.
Well, no, you're not going to necessarily get us back to work, but...
How about people not starving to death? I mean...
People are trying to work. I think that most people are trying to work, are trying to find work. I know that I'm a hireable person, and my industry is just in such a condition that it's like really difficult. People are trying to find work, and they need help.
Yeah, and a lot of work has disappeared. And even before the pandemic, Parson, we knew that a lot of, you know, we've been having the discussion about automation, and we know there are more jobs going away. Andrew Yang was talking about it during the primaries. And the things that you prepare for before they're on you are better handled than the things that you wait until they're a problem to try to solve.
I think that's, that's true regardless of any situation, but absolutely true when it comes to this administration. He didn't care. He never gave a damn. He never gave a damn about the future when he walked in. He never gave a damn. He does not care about anything other than the title and the power of, and just being the president. He hasn't helped anybody.
No.
He doesn't. And if he did, it was probably not on purpose.
Exactly.
Well, the few things that helped people and during his administration was probably, oh, thank God, some sane person got him to do something nice today.
That's the problem with all the senators and the members of the House. They were willing to put up with any amount of skullduggery, treason, whatever, as long as their pet projects were going forward. It didn't matter what he tweeted, how many lies he told per day, as long as people like Kelly Loeffler's husband got his tax cut. You know, she was the richest person in the entire Congress. And they needed a tax cut but it was okay because it's good for me and I can look the other way. And by the way, as we move into the final half hour of the program or so, just to let y'all know, we are still at $470 to go in fundraising, and there is the $15 Who is John Galt? He's a fucking dick challenge. So if we can get that met, we'll take it down to $440, and that'll leave us $140 from being fully funded for last week. So I'm hoping real hard that we
Can I jump in and also add on to this?
Yeah,
absolutely. Please contribute and help raise, because conversations like this that Robin and I are having are so important. And I think that the listeners that are out there probably agree with me that these types of dialogues need to take place. So funding an institution like the Horn is important.
And, you know, at this point in time, yeah, that's fantastic. At this point in time, I'm glad you used that word because, well, you know, when you get to be the age this program is, it does kind of approach being an institution.
Well, you've been a staple of as long as I can remember. I mean, I've known you at this point over a decade. We've worked together on multiple different different events and things we've talked about, I don't know how many times on the show. You've been an outlet for so many people, and I think that's great. And I think that, you know, even like your the experience you're going through now, being so open with what you're like, that you're transitioning, like you have been a voice, but also a listener for so many people. And this is a safe place. This is a place where people can be heard. This is where you can, like, it's your house, but thank you for letting us in.
Well, as far as this program's concerned, Parson, it feels very much like an our house kind of thing, because it's the community that makes it as wonderful as it is. If I was just
sitting, that's how it feels.
Yeah, if I was just sitting here yammering into the dark every night, it really wouldn't be worth doing.
I kind of believe that you do, even when you like cut off, you still sit and yammer a little bit sometimes. But I'm just
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you know, sometimes Agnes and I just sit there in the bedroom and pause whatever movie we're watching before bed and yell for a little bit, not at each other, not angry. It's just like, God, I can't believe it. Did you see this? You know, and when we're in separate, I mean, this is, you know, 21st century. We can be in separate parts of the houses, tweeting stories back and forth to each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And thank you, Roberto. Roberto just met Steve's Who is John Galt? John Galt's a fucking dick challenge. And so we're actually down to 430. So we're $130 away from being fully funded for last week. And hopefully we'll get there so that we'll just be working on this week tomorrow. You know, it's a hell of a way to run a railroad, but it's managed to keep us going for as long as we have, Parson.
And you've done it.
Because there's a certain beauty, there really, really is, to not being beholden to anybody but the community, and to certainly not have to wake up every day and worry about whether or not I offended some sponsor last night.
Well, it goes back exactly to what I was just trying to say, is that you have been, you've been there, and people appreciate that. People would not give you donations if they didn't find some value in the talks that you have every evening. And, you know, there is such a release in sometimes when you're mad, the shit you say is like everybody's thinking it, and everybody needs that sometimes.
Well, you can't just stay calm all the time. You can't do it. I mean, I got a story sitting in front of me that just makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits.
I mean, what do you got?
Of all the shittiness, I mean, somehow it's like when Glenn in San Diego wrote in earlier this evening to tell us that gorillas at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park are testing positive for COVID. It's just like, you just kind of, oh, God damn, really? Because, you know, it's somehow worse. I know it doesn't make any sense, but it's like, fuck. So here's a story out of Florida. There is now a $50,000 reward out trying to find whoever the horrible, horrible, terrible, really bad, awful, no good, shitty attempt at a human being it was who carved the word Trump into the living hide of a manatee.
Ew.
I mean, what kind of sadistic, sick member of the Jeffrey Dahmer fan club are you? I mean, these are sweet-natured animals. You know,
carve things into other beings.
Trump voters do.
Also, let me just say that if folks are interested in hearing more about zoonosis or the zoonotic spread of coronavirus diseases, we did cover that in my podcast, Frame of View, several months ago. You can find it on YouTube.
Excellent. And, you know, I remember Jimmy Buffett had a line in a song years and years and years ago. And he said, he sang, sometimes I see me as an old manatee heading south as the waters grow colder. Try to steer clear of the humdrum so near, it cuts pockmarks deep in its shoulder. Because that's one of the things that plagues the manatee population is that people will zip by in their bass boats and speed boats and whatnot.
Right.
And chop them up because, you know, who cares? But this is a new level of low for these dirtbag maggot dickheads. I mean, imagine the trouble you have to go to.
Exactly what I'm saying. Like, you decided not only... You're not even it's not graffiti on a bathroom wall. You took time to capture, I'm sure you had to subdue a living creature and carve Trump into it, and then to send it to after you torture that freaking
but I mean
creature,
isn't that just after everything we've seen, isn't that just like peak maggot?
Yeah,
and you know they're chicken shits too, so you know I don't see him trying to shave Trump into the fur of a tiger. You know, these are innocent, non-threatening animals. How fucking sick are you? And I hope the $50,000 reward serves as an inducement. But, you know, maggots being maggots, the guy who did it, and I'm sure it was a guy, come on, will probably step forward and say, yeah, I did it. Can I have my $50,000 now? I gotta buy me some more Trump flags.
I need bail money.
So please send snacks. And Jesus, it was please send snacks at Malheur in Oregon a couple of years ago. And now we got Buffalo Hat Boy. Please send organic snacks. Sometimes it's hard not to look up and go, you know, we're fucked as a nation. And it's just, you know, it's just a slow rolling fuck.
When there's that much divide, you have to acknowledge that there are. So we're having a conversation right now about how crazy they are. And somewhere there's folks having conversations about how people like you and I are completely crazy and radical and
stupid liberals caring more about some sea cow than they do human beings.
Socialists and
listen to them virtue signaling about how they care about the manatees. Them damn liberals eat fetuses on their breakfast cereal every morning because they don't care about the abortion.
They gonna get upset about a manatee, but they'll eat a fetus for breakfast.
I mean, they all just bass ackwards. They ain't got no prioritize.
Yeah, we could do this for a long. You want a character? We could do that all day. But we will definitely get ourselves in trouble if we continue right now.
Yeah, we probably better not. But I had a note from Arnold who said, I would beat that person with a rubber hose and make them scream. It's like doing anything to horses or cows or any other innocent animal. These fucking people. My ex-wife wouldn't let me get tigers because they'd eat the horses, but I digress.
I don't know who said this, but the idea of sending I don't even know what an organic dildo is or why you would eat it, but, I mean, that also popped up on your chat.
Oh, beautiful. Well, that maybe it was vegan. I don't know. A lot of things pop up in the chat, and some evenings it's just a race to try to get to 8 p.m. before the whole program can go right into the gutter.
Yeah, are we guttering? I think we're holding it down.
We're trying. And I need to send out thanks to Mark. Thank you, Mark. Mark just got us down to $400 even, and that means we're only $100 away from fully funding last week, which is wonderful. By the way, subject line tigers, Lee in New York says, can we dare these maggots to approach a tiger with just a razor to put Trump on the side? Don't they have freedom? Or you know, how about one of those lovely cuddly hippopotamuses?
I want the hippopotamus for Christmas.
Exactly. And you know, that's actually the most dangerous animal on the entire African continent.
Yes, just as I learned when I worked in Montana, that the moose is actually far more dangerous than the grizzly.
Yeah, because the moose will just sort of run over you.
Yeah, it will just tear you up in ways in which you don't even want to be described. Hooves and giant, you know, antlers. And bad attitude. And they're like 9 feet tall, these moose. I learned what to be afraid of when I went to the Rocky Mountains. Neihart, Montana, small town, population 38. Also shooting naked and afraid. Learned to be more afraid of the moose than the grizzlies.
They'll make a person of faith out of you real quick because, you know, you will pray.
Yeah, if you had never before, you will then.
Ugh. Of course, you know, this past summer we had the great serpentine freakout when the snake came into the studio.
Oh, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
Have you recovered?
Well, I mean, no, we never found the snake, and the snake never found us. So we're just telling ourselves that it was just passing through.
Yeah, or you're cohabitating.
Shut up. And by the way, you have driven our buddy Scott in San Diego plumb crazy. He wants to know about your radio experience because Scott's an old hand at radio too. And Parson on DC radio, was it AM or FM in DC itself or in the burbs? All news talk, music format, commercial, non-commercial, what years? I'm familiar enough with the market to guess with just a few clues.
Good Lord. All right.
Okay. AM or FM?
Well, I was responsible for both.
Okay.
So there was an AM and an FM.
It was an AM-FM combo.
I don't think anybody really listened to the AM station, and like that was a point of contention, because I really don't think anybody listened to it. But I was responsible for going and doing the AM broadcast, which I would pre-record, and then go and do my live FM broadcast, which really, like, looking back, was such a bad plan and made it so difficult to do my job.
Looking back, it was such a bad plan. It's just beautiful.
And it was just outside of Washington, D.C. It was, is he guessing?
He's trying to deduce.
All right.
So we've got AM FM combo, burbs of DC.
Not even burbs. We were a rural community.
Oh, well outside of DC then.
Just enough, 70 miles.
Okay, we've created a 70-mile radius. News talk, music.
We did have music, but the music was not present day.
Okay. Commercial, non-commercial?
It was an award-winning station for best, I believe it was documentary news category for the Virginia Broadcasting Association.
Okay, we've now put it in Virginia.
All right, we can put it in Virginia. That was almost a given.
Well, you mentioned Maryland drivers, so I was thinking there could be a Maryland possibility.
It's way safer to make fun of Maryland drivers when you're broadcasting from Virginia.
True enough. Okay, true enough. And what years?
It would be, let's see, that was a while ago. That was Oh, gosh, I don't even remember. Maybe 2014.
That 15? Far back. That was me being a smartass. That far back. You old dude, you.
Hey, look, I'm struggling to remember.
Okay, well.
But the station has been there for a very long time. And, okay, one last thing. The morning host that I shared my time with was the longest. Oh my gosh, I don't know what just happened there. Was the longest, continues to be the longest broadcasting on-air presence in the area.
Wow. Okay. And now I'm getting guesses, but I'm not going to ask you to answer any guesses because you're not telling where it is. But Scott's going, Fredericksburg?
Not Fredericksburg. Smaller. Think smaller.
Think small. Whatever you do in life, think small. Well, I tell you what, Parson, I have enjoyed this immensely. We must do this more often.
Thank you so much. I agree. I've been trying to get on the horn with you for a while, since even before we've been talking about getting together for months. So I really appreciate it, and it's always a pleasure.
Well, it's always a blast, and please stay safe and take all the necessary precautions. You're a dear friend. And
you too, and everybody else out there. Just, it's tough. Everybody do the best that you can. You know, we don't need to be pointing fingers, I guess, at folks that are. It's really rough to try to meet all the guidelines, but try.
There really are participation trophies in this pandemic.
Yeah.
And one of them is surviving, you know, because you're trying. And, I have no sympathy for the mask holes and COVID. It's, in fact, I think I'm openly hostile to them.
I'm not far behind you at this point. It's, as I've said before, call a spade, you're just being a dumbass. Why, you know, it's, you just don't believe.
But the thing is, Parson, they're being dumbasses with other people's lives.
Exactly.
You know, if you want to strap on the Acme rocket skates and fly into the face of a cliff somewhere in Monument Valley, that's on you, Wile E. Coyote.
If you want to have unprotected sex, that's between you and somebody else. But if you're going to fly across the country or go into our nation's capital or my grocery store down the street during a pandemic, it's beyond rude.
No.
It's reckless.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Albert,
respect my space.
As for Moosesesesses, My cousin's wife knew a moose. No, sorry, that's Monty Python. Albert lets us know, Albert in Rhode Island, a moose rack can measure 6 feet across from side to side. A guy driving a pickup in Alaska enraged a male moose once. The moose destroyed the whole front end of the guy's truck.
And then
subject line, dangerous animals. Jeremy in Vermont says, well, dangerous to fucking stupid humans who always think their humanity makes them superior to an animal. That
do not stop and take photo shoots and try to pet a moose. That was rule number one what I learned in Montana.
Don't pet the mooses.
Also, when I was a child, I went to a petting zoo and I asked my father if it was okay to pet peacocks, and he said, well, why don't you give it a try? And I tried to pet a peacock, and it jumped on my freaking head and tore me to shreds, and it was the most traumatic experience ever. And then my dad strangled a peacock, and it became a whole big thing. So, look, don't put your hands on – petting zoo is – they probably shouldn't have called it that. But don't pet a peacock, and do not incite a moose.
No, no.
So, see, I'm now you got. I've been thinking the whole program about, you know, other animals besides a possum.
Oh yeah, what animal do you want to be?
I don't know. Gloria Groundhog. Wanda Woodchuck.
What are you doing with your voice? We're gonna have to like work through it, I think.
Oh no, that'll be fun. That's just character development. So.
Yeah. No, I'm excited now. All right, so you're definitely in, but we're going to have to think about this.
Okay.
I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Well, I think it's going to be a blast. And thank you to Scott in San Diego. We are now underneath the $400 mark. We're down to $390. So awesome. That's tremendous. We're 90 bucks away from being fully funded for last week. Tremendous.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, Parson Brown. Thank you for coming on and updating us on what your world's doing. And I have a feeling I'm not the only one going, gosh, I hope he finds time to pull some of that Topless America stuff out, because it could be really instructive right now.
I hear that. I hear it loud and clear. And I promise you that I'm doing what I can to put those wheels in motion, because we want to get that out there to people.
Yes. I think it will be extremely valuable. Parson, take care of yourself. Stay safe. Do all those things, and let us know when anything exciting is coming up that you've been working on. We now have two people who are friends of the program who are in deeply in the entertainment industry. One on the left coast and one on the right. We got you in L.A. and our buddy Dan Fisher up in New York. And
awesome.
And you both talked about the extreme. Stress that has been brought on by this pandemic.
Yeah, and it's not only our industry. It's, you know, of course,
it's,
like
it's,
we can
it's
speak
everybody. But you know, if you're little things,
working freelance when you have to go into quarantine before every job before you can even begin, it exacerbates everything, every part of the production.
And another thing that a lot of people don't realize, there's a lot of community theaters in this country that have gone belly up because they exist.
Oh, they're struggling
exist on a,
any of them.
And this is, you know, all amateur stuff, but when it goes away from a community has lost something.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one thing. That's one thing that our communities have lost. We've lost, you know, gathering and having our kids be at libraries for book readings. We've lost. I don't really care so much about football games, but that matters to people.
Well, and they're economic drivers too.
Yeah, you know, people have reasons, like valid reasons, to be frustrated and to feel worn down. But I personally think that, as tough as it is, as long as we can try to be there for each other, that's the best way to move forward. Other people can do what they're going to do. And
oh, by the way, going back for just a minute, Devin jumped in with a suggestion. Paula Polecat.
Well, Possum Brown's best friend is a skunk named Skiggins. But it's got a voice.
That, well, you know, there can maybe.
I'm gonna find you one.
Parson, have yourself a good evening. Take care. I'm so glad you joined
you
in the conversation.
Too. I love you so much.
I love you, brother.
And solidarity forever. Robin, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
It always is. Take care, Parson Brown.
Good night.
Bye now. From Frame of View, and prior to that, the Topless America Project. That's my dear, dear, dear friend, Parson Brown, Possum Brown. Thank you all for joining in this Moran Monday. It's been wonderful. So tomorrow we will be at 690 for fundraising. 90, and like I said, we're 90 bucks away from finishing last week, so that's huge. If you're going to watch the football game, enjoy it. I will utter my obligatory and you know, Stephen, New York, and I are dire enemies right now, and will be until at least the end of the game. Buckeye that he is, and well, daughter of the capstone at Tuscaloosa that I am. And so I'll thank you all and wish you a happy evening. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your subscriptions via Patreon and PayPal, your a la carte contributions. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at HeadOn.live at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is always HeadOn.live. Yes. And thank you, John Fox in Australia. John and I had a good chat last night. We're working on reimaging the program. And thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Keep healing, Ben. Keep healing. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Best way to stay safe is staying home. If you can't stay home, take every precaution you can. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer liberally, maintain your social distance 10 feet between people with masks, and you can't get far enough away enough from somebody who doesn't have one. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, hey, let's go carve Trump in a manatee, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.